myself ponies, and that way I could bear Miss Smith touching me.
Right, she said. We'll go to the doctor tomorrow, find out what we should do for you.
He won't want her, Jamie said. Nice people hate that ugly foot.
Miss Smith let out a short, harsh laugh.
You're in luck, then, she said, because I am not a nice person at all. She was not a nice person, but she cleaned up the floor. She was not a nice person, but she bandaged my foot in a white piece of cloth and gave us two of her own clean shirts to wear. They hung past our knees. She combed or cut the tangles out of our hair, which took ages. And then she made a big pan of scrambled eggs. It's all the food I have, she said. I haven't been shopping this week. I wasn't expecting you.
All the food she had, she said, except there was butter on the slightly stale bread, and sugar in the tea.
The eggs looked slimy, but I was hungry enough to eat anything, and they tasted fine.
When I wiped my plate with my bread, she gave me another spoonful of eggs.
"What am I supposed to do with you?" she asked. It was such an odd question.
"Nothing," I said. "Ada stays inside," Jamie offered.
"I take care of him," I said. "You won't have to." Miss Smith frowned. "How old are you?" This question made me squirm.
"Jamie's 6," I said. "Mam said. He's got to go to school."
"He's awfully small for 6," Miss Smith said.
"Mam said."
"And surely you're older than he is," she continued. "Don't you go to school?" Jamie said.
"Not with that ugly foot."
Miss Smith snorted. "That foot's a long way from her brain." She tapped her knife against the edge of her plate. "Birthdays. When? Names. Real names. Not this Smith nonsense."
"Ada and Jamie," I said. "Smith. That's all I know."
She glared at me. I glared back. After a few moments, her gaze softened.
"You really don't know?"
I looked at the eggs on my plate. "I asked once," I said. "Mam said it didn't matter." Miss Smith drew in her breath. "Okay," she said. "Jamie's 6. You're older. Shall we say 9? I couldn't tell by her voice how angry she was. I shrugged. 9 was fine. I knew my numbers. 8, 9, 10.
"I'll write your parents," Miss Smith said. "Lady Thornton will get me their address, and I'll write them. They'll tell me."
She looked us up and down. "What does your father do?"
"Nothing," I said.
"He's dead." "Dead for years. Either that or gone. I didn't know which." If I squeezed my eyes shut and concentrated, I thought I could remember him. But only as a sort of blurry shadow. A tall man. Quiet. Not like Mam. "Oh," said Miss Smith. "I'll write your mother then." Miss Smith was not a nice person. But the bed she put us in was soft and clean, with smooth thin blankets and warm thicker ones. She pulled the curtain across the window to shut out the light. I was so, so tired.
"Miss," I asked, "whose is the pony?"
I had to know before I went to sleep. Miss Smith paused, her hand on the curtain. She looked out the window.
"His name is Butter," she said. "Becky gave him to me."
"Who's Becky?"
Jamie asked. But she didn't reply.
Chapter 8.
In the morning, we slept until the sun was halfway up the sky. Miss Smith slept late, too, I could hear her snoring in the room across the hall. I took Jamie downstairs and fed him bread. I crawled again, the way I did at home. I meant to keep walking, but crawling was so much easier. The main room had a back door. Outside was a little space fenced by a stone wall, and then another much bigger space, also fenced. The pony, named Butter, stood in the bigger space, facing the house, eyes and ears alert. I smiled. He looked like he was waiting for me. Jamie said, grabbing my arm, "You're not supposed to go outside." I shook him off. "That's over," I said. "Here, I can go where I like." He wavered.
"How do you know?"
It was my reward, I thought, for being brave, for walking so long, for walking away. I got to keep walking forever. I hauled myself to my feet. I would walk to the pony. I toddled and stumbled. Everything hurt. The pony watched me. When I reached the stone wall, I sat on it and swung my legs over to the other side. The pony stepped toward me, lowered his head, sniffed my hands, and pressed his neck against me. I put my arms around him. I understood how he got his name. He smelled like butter in the hot sun. I wanted to ride him, but wasn't sure how. His back was a long way from the ground. Plus, the girl I'd seen had had straps or something to hold on to. I stood, holding on to the pony's neck, and took a few cautious steps along his side. The grass in the field prickled my bare foot. The dampness felt cool on it, and seeped through the bandage on my other foot, too. The ground was soft. It moved when I stepped on it. Squishy, like new bread. Trees bordered the field, and their tops waved in the sun. Birds twittered. I knew about birds. We had them in the lane, but I'd never heard so many at once. There were flowers. Jamie ran around the field, singing to himself, whacking things with a stick he found. Butter lowered his head again, sniffing my hands. Did he think I'd brought him something? Should I have brought him something? What did ponies like? The end of his nose felt soft and warm. I traced my hands up his head to his ears and the clump of long hair between them. I rubbed his neck, and he sighed and leaned into me again. Then he took a step away and went back to eating grass. I sat down in the field and watched him. He ate as though eating was his job in life, as though he was saying, "I'm not all that hungry, mate, but I've got to keep on with it, see?" He flicked his tail back and forth, then took a step, dragging himself to fresher grass. I sat and watched him, and then I lay down. I was so stiff, and the warm sun felt so nice, and watched him. And then I fell asleep. When I woke, Miss Smith was standing over me. "You're sunburned," she said. "You stayed out too long." I sat up, stretching. Everything ached. The skin on my bare legs had turned pink. It hurt. But I was used to things hurting. "Aren't you hungry?" she asked. She sounded cross. I blinked. I was hungry. Crashingly, achingly hungry. I was used to that, too. What was I supposed to say? Did Miss Smith want me to be hungry, or not? "Why didn't you wake me this morning?" she said. "I'd never wake her. I wasn't stupid." "Come." She reached an arm toward me. "It's gone late. I've got to get you to the doctor, and we need to do some shopping."
"I don't need help," I said.
"Don't be ridiculous," she said, and hauled me up. I tried to shake her off, but my foot ached so terribly that in the end I let her help me back to the house.
Jamie was already inside, sitting at the table, eating canned beans and toast. I slid into a chair in the kitchen. Miss Smith thumped more beans onto a plate. "Your bandage is filthy already," she said. I took a deep breath. Before I could speak, Jamie said,
"I told her she wasn't supposed to go outside."
"Rubbish." Miss Smith's tone was sharp. "Of course you may go outside. We just need a better system. Those shoes you were wearing yesterday."
"Those were Mam's," I said.
"I could see they weren't yours," Miss Smith said, "though I don't suppose you can wear a regular shoe." I shrugged. "Well, we'll see what the doctor says. I've hired a taxi to take us there, and then we'll come up with something. Don't get used to it." "I can't afford cabs very often." I nodded, because that seemed best. It turned out that taxi and cab were both words that meant automobile. Two rides in 2 days. Astonishing. I knew what a doctor was, though I'd never seen one before. This one had funny things like panes of round window glass stuck in front of his eyes. He wore a long white coat like the butcher back home.
"Hop on up here," he said to us,
patting a big wooden table. Jamie hopped, but I couldn't.
"Ah," said the doctor, noticing my foot.
He lifted me onto the table. Mam never touched me unless it was to hit me. Jamie hugged me, but of course he never picked me up. "People were all the time touching me here. I didn't like it, not at all." The doctor poked and measured and inspected Jamie and me. He made us take off our shirts, and he held a cold metal thing to our chests with tubes that ran up to his ears. He ran his hands through our hair and studied the scratchy places on our skin.
"Impetigo," he said.
This made no sense to me, but Miss Smith pulled a little notebook out of her purse and wrote something down.
"They're pretty severely malnourished," he said. "Looks like rickets starting in the girl. Lots of sunlight for her. Good food. Milk."
"But what do I do with them?" Miss Smith said. "I've never been around children."
"Feed them, bathe them, make sure they get plenty of sleep," the doctor said. "They're no more difficult than puppies, really." He grinned. "Easier than horses."
"The horses belonged to Becky," Miss Smith snapped. "And I never had a dog."
"Who's Becky?" Jamie asked.
I shushed him.
"And what about Ada's foot?"
Miss Smith said. "What am I supposed to do about that?" I tucked my foot beneath me. Miss Smith tapped my knee.
"Show him," she said.
I didn't want to. I didn't want them touching me more. My foot was out of sight, bandaged, and I was managing to walk some, and I thought that ought to be enough. Miss Smith yanked my foot out.
"Behave," she said.
The doctor unwrapped the bandage.
"My, my," he said,
cradling my foot in his hand.
"An untreated club foot. I've never seen one before."
"I thought club feet were rather common," said Miss Smith.
"Oh, yes, certainly, but nearly always successfully resolved in infancy."
Miss Smith sucked in her breath in a way I didn't understand.
"But why wouldn't?"
She looked at me and made her voice stop. "Successfully resolved," I thought.
My foot was not successfully resolved.
It sounded like I'd done something wrong. Mam always said my foot was my fault. I'd always wondered whether that was true.
And club foot. That was my foot. A club foot.
The doctor poked at my club foot and twisted it and stared until I couldn't bear it any more. I thought of butter, how he smelled so warm and good, how his breath felt against my hand. Instead of going to an empty place in my head, now I could go to where butter was. And that was easy.
Ada!
Miss Smith said loudly.
Ada, come back. Dr. Graham asked you a question.
She was tapping my face. The doctor had wrapped my foot in a fresh bandage. It was over.
Are you in very much pain? He repeated.
How much was very much? What did he want me to say? I shrugged.
Did you understand what he said about seeing a specialist? Miss Smith said.
I looked at her. She looked back.
Yes or no? She said.
I shook my head. Miss Smith and the doctor exchanged glances. I felt like I'd said the wrong thing.
Dr. Graham thinks a specialist might be able to operate on your foot.
I didn't know what a specialist was. I didn't know what they meant by the word operate. But I knew better than to ask questions.
Okay, I said.
Miss Smith smiled.
It sounds scary, I know. But it would be a wonderful thing. I'll write to your mother right away to ask her permission. I can't imagine she'll object. Meanwhile, Dr. Graham's fetching a pair of crutches for you.
Crutches were long pieces of wood you stuck under your armpits so you could walk using the crutches and one good foot. Your bad foot, if you had one, didn't have to touch the ground at all. Crutches didn't hurt. The doctor said,
"See, I knew she could smile."
And Miss Smith shook her head and said,
"I don't believe it."
The doctor's place was right in town, near the train station. On crutches, I didn't need a taxi, so we walked right down the main street. I walked down the street, bad foot and all, and nobody stopped me. We went into the shops and bought meat and veg and groceries. I went into the shops and nobody turned me out. At one point, Miss Smith said, "Ada, would you hand me three of those apples?" I'd been careful not to touch anything up until then. But when she asked, I figured it must be okay. And I did it. And it was. The shopkeeper didn't even look at me. The shops had so much stuff in them, they gave me a jittery feeling. There was too much stuff to see. And I'd never known anyone to buy as much food as Miss Smith did, all at once. She paid for it, too. Straight up. With cash. Not a thing on tick. I nudged Jamie and he nodded. Miss Smith was rich. On the sidewalk, Miss Smith counted her remaining coins and sighed. She led us into a stern-looking brick shop. The inside was just people standing behind counters. You couldn't tell what they were selling at all.
"What's this place?" Jamie asked.
"It's a bank," Miss Smith said. "You've been to banks before." I didn't know why she'd think so. I'd never even heard of a place called a bank. Miss Smith scribbled on a scrap of paper and gave it to one of the men behind the counter, and he counted out money and gave it to her.
"A money store,"
Jamie whispered, eyes wide. I nodded. We sure didn't have one of those on our lane. We were back wearing our clothes from the day before. We couldn't have gone into town wearing only Miss Smith's shirts. But Miss Smith had washed them, so we looked and smelled nice. She marched us into a store that sold clothing anyhow, and bought us each a new set of clothes, top and bottom, and something called underwear, which she said we had to wear from now on. Three sets of that. And stockings, and then shoes for both of us, Jamie and me. "I got shoes already," Jamie said, eyeing the stout boots Miss Smith chose. "And Ada, she don't need 'em." Miss Smith ignored him. The shopkeeper, an unpleasant man with hairy eyebrows, said, "These evacuees is nothing but trouble, isn't they, miss? My missus is that fed up already. She's wanting to send them home,
Filthy little rats wet the bed.
Miss Smith gave him a look that made him shut his mouth, except he begged her pardon first. And when we walked out the door, I had a brown leather shoe on my good left foot.
A real shoe. For me.
Miss Smith had had to buy a whole pair. The man wouldn't sell her just one. She carried the other shoe in a bag.
"We'll save it," she said. "Perhaps some day."
I didn't know what she meant, and I didn't ask. I was getting tired, even with the crutches, and I only wanted to think about the walk home. But Jamie danced in front of me, smiling.
"If they can fix your foot," he said. "If they can fix it."
I smiled back at him. Jamie was such a hopeless fool. Chapter 9. Another thing Miss Smith did was exchange her old radio batteries for charged ones. Some folks in our lane had had radios, so I knew about them. But, as usual, not close up. Miss Smith's sat in the main room on a glossy wood cabinet. As soon as we got home, Saturday night, she put the new batteries in and started it up. Voices came out, talking. Miss Smith sighed.
"I wanted music," she said. She reached up and switched it off. "I suppose we'll have to hear all about the war, eventually."
She yawned and sat without moving. I thought of the food we'd bought. Apples? Meat? I stood up.
"Want me to make some tea, miss?" I asked, by way of suggestion. "Cut some bread and dripping?"
She frowned. "Of course not." I sat back down, disappointed. I was hungry again. But then we'd already eaten twice that day, if you counted the bread we swiped in the morning.
"It's nearly time for supper," Miss Smith said. She gave me a sort of a smile, although, like Mam's smiles, it didn't make her look happy. "I'll make supper. It's my job to take care of you."
"Right."
But then she got up, and she did make supper. A huge supper. Ham, boiled potatoes, little round green things called peas that came out of a can. Tomatoes, like the one Jamie swiped, only cut in thick slices. Bread with butter. So many different colours and shapes and smells. The peas rolled around my mouth until I bit them and they squished. Supper was like a miracle, it was. All that food, all at once. And yet Jamie, worn out and cross, refused to touch anything except ham. I wanted to smack him. Hot food and meat. Miss Smith might not want us, but she was feeding us fine. Not to mention, I had a shoe. That meant she didn't mind if I went outside.
"Leave him," Miss Smith said tiredly, when I started to tell Jamie off. To Jamie, she said, "You can't have second helpings of anything until you've taken one bite of everything on your plate." There had been pieces of cloth on the table, folded under the forks. Before she started eating, Miss Smith had put hers on her lap, so we had two. Now Jamie took his cloth and used it to cover his head.
"I want ham," he said through the cloth.
"You may have more ham after you've tried a bite of everything," Miss Smith said. "You're allowed to dislike food, but not before you've tasted it. And get that napkin off your head."
Jamie hurled his plate against the wall. It shattered. Miss Smith screamed. I tackled Jamie. I grabbed a piece of tomato off the floor and mashed it between his lips. He spat it at me.
"Eat it!" I roared.
I grabbed peas and shoved those down his gullet. He choked and gagged. Miss Smith yanked me loose.
"Ada," she said. "Ada, stop it. You'll hurt him." Hurt him, when it was him disobeying?
Bedtime, Jamie.
Miss Smith grabbed his flailing arm.
Bath, then bed.
She pulled him off the floor and carried him, kicking and screaming, up the stairs.
I'll kill him, I thought. I'll murder him for acting this way.
I found my crutches and got to my feet. I picked up the broken pieces of plate and the food scattered across the floor. I wiped up the water I'd spilled when I knocked over my glass. I could hear Jamie screaming upstairs. Miss Smith was either bathing him or slaughtering him.
Either was fine by me.
When I finished cleaning the kitchen, I climbed the stairs. Dead easy with the crutches. The screaming had stopped.
I put clean water in the bath for you, Miss Smith said. Did you finish your supper?
I nodded. I was still hungry, but my stomach was turning circles, and I couldn't eat. There was hot water, soap, a towel. I already felt clean, but the water was soothing. Afterward, I put on new clothes called pajamas that were supposed to be just to sleep in. Tops and bottoms, both blue. The fabric was so soft that for a moment I held it against my face. It was all soft, this place. Soft and good and frightening. At home, I knew who I was. When I went into the bedroom, Jamie was curled into a little ball, snoring, and Miss Smith was dozing in the chair beside the bed. She's not a nice person, I reminded myself, and went to sleep. In the middle of the night, I jumped awake, the way I did when Mam brought home guests. I sat up and clutched the blankets to me. My breath came in ragged gasps. Miss Smith said, "It's all right, Ada. You're all right." I turned. She was still sitting in the chair beside Jamie. Moonlight came through the window. Miss Smith's face was in shadow. My heart hammered. My head whirled. "You're all right," Miss Smith repeated. "Did you have a nightmare?"
"Did I? I didn't know."
Jamie lay beside me, his mouth slightly open, his breathing soft and regular.
"Were there bombs?" I asked.
She shook her head. "No, I didn't hear anything, but I woke up too." She held her wrist up to a patch of moonlight.
"It's gone 3 o'clock.
I didn't mean to fall asleep here. I've slept in this chair most of the night."
Somehow, I could hear her smiling. "I haven't slept well for a long time. Since Becky died, I don't sleep well."
I asked, "When did she die?"
Miss Smith cleared her throat. "3 years ago. 3 years ago next Tuesday."
She hadn't slept well for 3 years.
"It's part of why I didn't want to take you," she continued. "It's nothing to do with you. I'm always so much worse in the fall. And then the days get so short. And, well, I'm never very good in the winter either. Never was. Not even when I was your age. I hate the darkness and the cold." I nodded. I hated them too. In winter, chilblains covered my hands and feet, and they itched and burned like crazy. I asked, "Was Becky your kid?"
"My kid?"
Miss Smith gave a bark of harsh laughter. "No, she was my friend, my best friend. We were at university together. This was her house. She left it to me."
"And butter," I said, remembering.
"She gave me butter long before she died. She wanted me to like horses, the way she did. It didn't take."
"What killed her?" I asked.
"Pneumonia. That's a sickness in the lungs."
I nodded. Talking to Miss Smith had helped my panic subside. I unclenched my hands from the blankets and lay back down.
"You could sleep here," I said to Miss Smith.
Jamie was in the middle of the bed, so there was room on her side. She shook her head.
"No, I'll... well, maybe. Just as once."
She slid in beside Jamie and pulled the blankets over herself. I pulled my end over myself, feeling again the unexpected softness. The warmth. The next thing I knew, the room was full of light. The sound of church bells was coming through the open windows, and Miss Smith was saying,
"Oh, Jamie, you wet the bed."
He never did, at home. I remembered the surly salesman who complained about his evacuee's bed wetting, and I gave Jamie such a glare that he burst into tears.
"No matter," Miss Smith said, though she looked annoyed.
"It'll all wash. Monday we'll buy a rubber sheet in case it happens again." She was all the time having to buy stuff. I said, mostly to ease my worry,
"Of course, you're rich."
Of course she was, with the posh house and all the food, not to mention a bank to hand her money.
"Far from it," she replied.
"I've been living off the sale of Becky's hunters." She stood up, stretching. "What's with those blasted bells? Have we slept that long?" "I suppose I should be taking you to church. That's what a decent guardian would do." She shrugged. "Too late now." Downstairs, she made tea. She told Jamie to put the radio on. A deep, sonorous voice came out of it, very solemn and slow. Something about it made Jamie and me sit to listen. Miss Smith came in from the kitchen and perched on the edge of the chair. The voice said, "As the Prime Minister announced just a short time ago, England and Germany are now at war." The church bells had gone silent. Jamie said,
"Will they bomb us now?"
And Miss Smith nodded and said, "Yes." Chapter 10. Up until then, that morning, I'd forgotten about the bombs. They were supposed to be in London, not here at Miss Smith's house. But even so, I'd forgotten them. You wouldn't think you could forget a thing like bombs. The squelchy feeling swelled in my stomach again.
"What do they mean, we are now at war?" I asked. "Weren't we already? We're here."
"The government evacuated cities ahead of time," Miss Smith explained. "They knew the war was coming, just not exactly when."
"If they knew it was coming, they could have stopped it," I said.
Miss Smith shook her head. "You can't stop Hitler without a fight." "Don't worry, Ada. You'll be safe, and your mother will be safe, and I'm sure you'll be able to go home soon." The way she said it, with a fake smile, told me she was lying.
I didn't know why she would lie.
"I hope not," I said, before I thought. I bit back my next words, which were, "I'd rather be here." Miss Smith looked startled. She seemed about to say something, but, before she could, Jamie began to cry.
"I want to go home," he said. "I don't want a war. I don't want bombs. I'm scared. I want to go home."
When I thought of going home, I couldn't breathe. Home was more frightening than bombs. What was Jamie thinking? Miss Smith sighed. She took her handkerchief and wiped the tears and snot off Jamie's face. "No one's asking us what we want," she said. "Come, let's have something to eat." After we ate, Miss Smith sat beside the radio, looking distant and unhappy.
"Miss," I said, "have they started bombing yet?"
She shook her head. "Not yet. The sirens went off in London, but it was just a drill." I perched on the edge of the chair beside her. The voice on the radio droned on.
"Miss," I said, "what are hunters?"
She looked up, as though half asleep.
"What?"
I repeated the question. "You said you were living off the sale of Becky's hunters," I said. "I knew about selling things. There was a pawn shop down our lane, and when work at the docks was slow, women took things there."
"Hunters are an expensive type of horse," she said. "Becky had two of them."
"We could eat less," I said. "Jamie and me, we're used to it." Miss Smith's gaze sharpened.
"Of course not," she said.
Her voice took on an edge that made me swallow.
"You aren't to worry about that. I'll handle it, or Lady Thornton will. You'll be looked after."
"It's just..."
"You're not to worry," she said. "It's a beautiful day. Wouldn't you like to play outside?"
Jamie was already out there. I nodded, took my crutches, and went. Butter grazed far across the field.
"Butter!"
I called, sliding over the pasture wall. He raised his head, but didn't come to me. I lay down. The field was fascinating. Grass, dirt, flowers, little flying bugs. I rolled onto my stomach and stroked the grass, sniffed it, pulled it out of the dirt, scooted forward to examine a white flower. Eventually, I felt a whoosh of breath against my neck. I rolled over, laughing, expecting Jamie. But it was Butter. He sniffed my head, then stepped aside, grazing. I watched his feet and how he moved them, and how his long yellow tail swished flies away. The sun was high, and then it was lower, and the air grew chilly.
"Supper!"
Miss Smith shouted from the house. When we came in, she gave me an eye and said, "Have you been rolling in mud?" I didn't know what she meant.
"Never mind," she said. "Don't look so stricken. You'll wash."
Jamie shouted,
"Another bath!"
"Sit and eat," Miss Smith said. "Yes, a bath. You can plan on having a bath every night while you're here."
"Every night?"
"Mud or not, I felt cleaner than I'd ever been." "I don't mind you getting dirty," Miss Smith said, "but I won't have mud on my sheets." Jamie and I looked around. There were lots of things whose names we didn't know. And clearly she did mind our getting dirty, at least a little. Finally I said,
"Miss, what are sheets?"
Sheets were the thin white blankets on the bed. Supper was something called soup that came in bowls. You were supposed to drink it from spoons, not from the bowls themselves, which seemed like too much work. But I was hungry, and the soup was salty and had bits of meat in it, so I did as I was told. Jamie refused to eat at all.
"If you want to go to bed hungry, you certainly may," Miss Smith said. "Soup is all I've made, and soup is all there is to eat."
This was a lie, and we all knew it. Her cupboard held all sorts of food. But Jamie had gone to bed hungry before. It wouldn't kill him. At night he cried into his pillow, and in the morning he'd wet the bed again.
"I want to go home," he said. "I want to see Billy White. I want to be like always. I want to go home."
I didn't. Not ever. I had run away once, and I'd run away again. Chapter 11. The next week, three things happened. First, Miss Smith spent most of each day either sleeping or staring dully into space. On Monday, she made meals for us, but did nothing else. On Tuesday, she didn't even get out of bed. I'd watched her cooking on her range enough to understand how it worked, so I fed Jamie and me. Mid-afternoon, I made Miss Smith some tea. Jamie carried it up the stairs for me, and we took it into her room. She lay on her side, awake, but staring at nothing. Her eyes were red and swollen. She seemed surprised to see us. "I've abandoned you," she said, without moving. "I told Lady Thornton I'm not fit to care for children. I said so." I set the tea on the table by her bed. "Here, miss." She sat up. "You shouldn't have to take care of me," she said. "I'm supposed to be taking care of you." She took a sip, and fresh tears sprang to her eyes. "You've sugared it," she said. That was how she took it. One sugar, no milk. I'd watched. "Yes, miss," I said, ducking a little in case she tried to smack me. "Not much, though. There's plenty of sugar left. I didn't take any." Though I'd let Jamie have some. "I'm not going to hit you," she said. "I wish you'd understand that. I'm neglecting you, certainly, but I won't hit you, and I don't care what you eat. It was thoughtful of you to sugar my tea. It was thoughtful of you to bring me tea in the first place." "Yes, miss," I said. "Thoughtful, good or bad?" She sighed. "And we haven't heard back from your mother. Your name is Smith, though. Your last name. Until Lady Thornton told me, I was sure you were lying."
"Yes, miss."
"After that business about Hitler." I turned to go. I'd had an eventful morning, and I was hungry myself, and could do with some tea.
"It's a common enough name, Smith," Miss Smith said. "But still, I thought you were lying."
She stayed in bed even after she finished the tea. I let Jamie rummage through the cupboard and eat anything he liked, and I did too, though I was pretty sure I'd get in trouble for it later on. I let Jamie skip his bath, but I took an extra long one, with hot water so deep my legs floated. I pulled the sheets off the bed so it wouldn't matter that Jamie had wet them the night before, and we slept fine. In the morning, Miss Smith got up, her frizzy hair a yellow cloud around her head. "I'll try to do better," she told us. "Yesterday was about Becky. I'll do better today." I shrugged. "I can take care of Jamie."
"Probably," Miss Smith said, "but somebody ought to take care of you."
That was the first thing. The second was that the Royal Air Force built an airfield across the road from Butter's pasture. It went up completely in 3 days. Landing strip, huts, everything. Jamie, fascinated, kept sneaking over to watch, until an officer marched him back to Miss Smith, with his hand around Jamie's neck. "Keep him home, Mom," he said. "No civilians on the airfield." The third thing is that Billy White went back to London. Jamie had fussed about missing Billy and his friends, but I didn't know how to find them, and I wasn't going to walk the countryside in a blind search. I'd gotten the hang of crutches quick, so walking was easy. But I enjoyed having Jamie to myself. We were spending our days outside. There was a building in the garden called a stable that Becky's horses used to live in, and sometimes we played there. But mostly we were in Butter's field, which I loved. On Thursday, all three of us walked into town, because we'd finally eaten up most of the food. The first thing we saw was Billy White with his mother and his sisters waiting at the station for the train.
"Billy!"
Jamie shouted. He ran up to Billy's family and grinned at them.
"Where are you staying? I'm not far. It's just..."
Billy said. "Mum's come to take us. We're going home." Jamie stared.
"But what about Hitler?" he asked. "What about the bombs?"
"Haven't been any bombs so far," Billy's mother said. She had her arm around her youngest girl. When I smiled at the girl, Billy's mother pulled her a little bit away from me, as though my bad foot might be catching.
"And I can't stand it, being away from them," she went on. "It feels wrong. I reckon we'll stick the war out together."
She gave me a sideways glance.
"Is that you, Ada? Your mum said as how you'd gone too, but I didn't believe it. Only you weren't at your window."
She looked me up and down, particularly down, at my carefully bandaged foot. Miss Smith washed the bandages and gave me a clean one every day.
"I'm not simple," I said. "I've got a bad foot, that's all."
"I dunno," Billy's mother said, still shielding her daughter. "Your mam."
"I've written to her," Miss Smith said, coming up behind us.
"But perhaps you could take a message to her, too. The doctor says..." Billy interrupted.
"I hate it here," he said. "The people that took us, they're mean as a bunch of starved cats." "I hate it here, too," Jamie said. He turned to Miss Smith. "Can I go home? Will you take us home?"
Miss Smith shook her head, smiling, as though Jamie were making a joke. "I've never even been to London," she said. "I wouldn't know where to go."
"Home," Jamie insisted.
"Where's Stephen?" I asked.
Billy's mum scowled.
"He won't come," she said. "Thinks he's important, he does."
She gave me another odd look.
"I'm that surprised to see you out with ordinary people. I thought they'd put you in an asylum."
From the tone of her voice, it was clear she thought I should be locked away. The disgust in it stunned me. For years I'd waved to Billy's mother out my window, and she always waved back. I'd thought she was a nice person. I'd thought she liked me. Clearly she did not. I didn't know what to say. I didn't even know where to look. Susan's hand touched my shoulder, and I turned a little so that I could see the edge of her skirt. I couldn't stand looking at Billy's mother any more. The train came up, and Billy's mother herded her children toward it. Jamie began to howl.
"Take me with you!"
Miss Smith held him back.
"Your mother wants you here," she said. "She wants you safe."
"She misses me," Jamie said. "And Ada'll take care of me. Mam misses us, right, Ada? Right? She wants us home."
I swallowed. Maybe. After all, with me gone, she didn't have anybody to fix her tea. Maybe she'd be happy to see me, now that I could walk, especially with the crutches. Maybe she'd wonder why she never thought of crutches herself. Maybe she'd see I wasn't simple. Or maybe I was. Maybe there was a reason they kept me shut up in one room. A wave of dizziness swept me.
"Think of butter," I told myself desperately. "Think of riding butter."
Meanwhile, Jamie's screams increased. He kicked Miss Smith hard and tried to yank himself out of her grasp.
"Billy," he shouted, "take me with you. I want to go. I want to go home."
Miss Smith held on to him until the train had gone.
"I hate you," Jamie sobbed, flailing his arms and legs. "I hate you, I hate you. I want to go home."
Miss Smith grabbed him by the wrist and hauled him down the street in stony-faced silence.
"Come along, Ada," she snapped, without looking back.
Jamie continued to sob. Snot ran down his chin.
"I hate you," he howled. "I hate you."
"Trouble?" asked a calm voice.
I looked up. It was the Iron Woman, the one who put us into her automobile, and by her side, herself in miniature, an iron-faced girl, one of the bright girls in ribbons who had served us tea. To my surprise, Miss Smith rolled her eyes and shook her head,
as though all Jamie's yelling hadn't bothered her a bit.
"It's only a tantrum," she said. He saw his friend leave.
The Iron Woman turned on Jamie.
"Stop screaming," she said crisply. "Stop it this instant. You'll frighten the horses."
Jamie stopped. He looked around.
"What horses?"
the Iron Woman said.
"It's a figure of speech."
To Miss Smith, she said,
"At least a dozen of them have gone back already. I've told their parents over and over that it isn't safe. London will be bombed. But it's no use. Those simple-minded women prefer their present comfort to the long-term safety of their children."
Simple-minded women. Simple like me. Maybe everyone was simple on my lane.
The Iron Woman eyed Jamie and me.
"Yours are certainly looking better. A credit to you."
"Hardly," Miss Smith said. "All I did was put them in clean clothes and feed them." She rubbed stinky lotion on our impetigo, too, but I noticed she didn't tell the Iron Woman that. Instead, she said, hesitatingly,
"Perhaps if you have hand-me-downs, or if you know someone who does, I can't afford all they'll need for winter."
The Iron Lady pulled a clipboard out of her large handbag. She probably held a clipboard in her sleep.
"Of course," she said, writing something down. "I'm organizing a used clothing collection in town. We don't expect you to be able to cover clothing out of the allowance. They were supposed to bring their own. Well, never mind. They should have come with more than they did, obviously."
Her iron-faced daughter was staring at my bandaged foot. I leaned close and whispered,
"It just happened yesterday. I got stepped on by our pony."
The girl's eyes narrowed. She whispered back,
"That's an awful lie."
I said,
"We have too got a pony."
She said,
"It doesn't hurt that much when a pony steps on you. I've been stepped on dozens of times."
Well, she had me there. I didn't know what to say, so I stuck my tongue out at her. She bared her teeth in response.
"Like a tiger."
"Cool." Meanwhile, Miss Smith was saying,
"What allowance?"
"It turned out she was getting paid for taking us in. 19 shillings a week. Nearly a whole pound.
If she hadn't been rich before, she was now."
I let out a deep breath.
I could quit worrying over what my shoe had cost and how much food we ate. Mam didn't earn anything like 19 shillings a week. Jamie and I could eat all we wanted on 19 shillings a week.
"I can't believe you didn't know that," the Iron Woman said.
"Surely I explained."
"Oh," Miss Smith said with a little laugh, "I wasn't listening to a word you said."
As we continued down the street, Jamie subdued but still whimpering, I said,
"That's £3.16 a month, miss. You could take in more of us and get rich."
Miss Smith scowled. "Thank God I'm not reduced to that."
Chapter 12. All this time, in secret, I'd been messing with butter. What Miss Smith didn't know I was doing, she couldn't forbid. The Tuesday that she stayed in bed, I sat on him for the first time. I coaxed him to stand beside the stone wall, then climbed the wall, wobbling without my crutches, and threw my bad leg across his back. I grabbed his mane and scrambled. And there I was, astride him. The smell of him rose up around me, and his coat felt warm and prickly against my legs. He walked forward, his swinging steps moving my hips along with him. I held on to his mane for balance. I tried to steer him, but it didn't work, and before long he dropped his head to graze. I didn't mind. I sat on him most of that morning, until I grew hungry myself. Then I slid off him and went in to eat. The next day my legs felt wobbly, all stretched out in a new way.
I didn't mind that either. It was nothing like as bad as walking.
The stables had a storeroom attached. It had been locked, but Jamie had found the key under a rock near the door. Inside was all sorts of stuff I guessed had to do with Becky and her horses. I went looking for straps like I'd seen on the pony who raced our train, and found boxes full of leather pieces, some of them buckled together. I pulled them out and examined them. If you pick up a bridle, which is the leather stuff that goes around the horse's head, by the wrong piece, by the noseband or the cheek piece, say, instead of the headstall, it doesn't look like anything that could go onto a horse. It just looks like a mess of leather. So at first, I couldn't make sense of anything. Finally, I found a sort of square thing on a shelf. It had pieces of paper covered in writing I couldn't read, and part way through had a drawing of a horse's head with the leather pieces fastened round. I studied it and the leather bits until I understood. That afternoon, when I tried to bridle Butter, I must have been using tack that fit one of Becky's bigger horses. I got the headpiece over his ears, but the metal bit hung below his chin, and the part that should have wrapped around his head wrapped around his nostrils instead. He snorted and ran off, trailing the reins. It took me half the afternoon to catch him, and that was with Jamie's help. On Thursday afternoon, when we got home from shopping, I tried a smaller bridle, and everything worked to treat. Butter came to me when I called. I fed him a piece of dried porridge from my pocket. I put the bridle on him, and it fit. I didn't know the words then. Bridle, bit, reins, cheek piece, or headstall. But I know them now, and the thing with the pieces of paper and the picture of a bridled horse was a book. My first. Anyway, there stood Butter, bridled, and me ready. When I climbed onto him, he sighed and went to put his head down to graze. I yanked on the reins, and he threw his head up, startled. That was better. I kicked him a bit, because I'd discovered this would make him move. He walked forward. I pulled on one side of the reins, and he turned. I pulled on both, and he stopped. It was all easy, I thought. I thumped him hard with my legs to try to make him run. He threw his head down, bucked, and tossed me over his ears. I landed on my back in the grass. Jamie ran to me.
Ada, are you dead?
I scrambled to my feet. Not a bit. I got back on and Butter tried it again. This time I kept his head up, and he couldn't buck, not exactly, so he jumped sideways and got me off that way instead. I thunked my head on the ground and went dizzy for a moment. You can have a turn, I said to Jamie. He shook his head.
I don't want one. I don't think he likes it.
I considered this. Butter might not like it right this moment, when he was used to eating all day long. But he'd like it later. Later, when we were running, out in the open, soaring over stone walls, he'd like it then. I liked it right away. Falling off didn't scare me. Learning to ride was like learning to walk. It hurt, but I kept on. If Miss Smith wondered why my new blouse was covered in grass stains, or how my new skirt got a rip near the hem, she never said a thing. She just sighed, as usual, and threw the shirt into the wash boiler and mended the rip with a shiny metal thing like a toothpick and a piece of thread.
"Why does she make that noise?" Jamie asked at night.
He imitated Miss Smith's sigh. It wasn't a noise Mam ever made. I shrugged.
She doesn't like us. She didn't want us, remember?
I tried not to make much work for her, so she wouldn't force the Iron Woman to take us back. I washed the dishes and made Jamie dry. I went along with the baths and the hair brushing, and I got Jamie to cooperate too. I even made him eat the strange food, though the only way to do that was by threatening him.